Today is Friday, the second day of September, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, President Obama heads east for a meeting of international leaders amid very tight security in the host city of Hangzhou, China.
The local government and authorities have deployed, some say, around 70,000 young students and old grandparents who are on the streets kind of keeping an eye on things at bus stops, and there's police everywhere.
That's VOA's Beijing Bureau Chief Bill Lyde. He'll join us momentarily. Also ahead, Russia's leader denies cyber snooping on the United States. You'll hear about what is being done about the issue as far as the U.S. elections are concerned. All on today's International Edition. We start with President Obama's final trip to the Far East as the U.S. president, as he is on his way now. We get in touch with VOA's Beijing Bureau Chief, Bill Ide, who is in the city of Hangzhou, where the first of the meetings will take place in a day or so. And, Bill, what is on top of President Obama's list as he heads to China?
Well, there's a ton of things that they need to discuss. One of the things that we're hearing, one of the announcements that could come out is something related to climate change, that both would commit their countries to the Paris Accord. So we'll be looking for that. But, you know, the G20 is about trade, so you would think that they're also going to be talking about trade issues and disputes and concerns that both sides have. But in addition to that, you've got the disputes over the South China Sea, and in recent days, the issue of human rights is definitely going to come up again. This is President Obama's last trip to the region, so he really wants to shore up this relationship as best he can to try to keep it going in a sort of a positive direction, or at least to highlight the ways that the two can work together. And that is key. While many argue and say that the pivot is about fighting against China or trying to encircle China, it's also about keeping U.S. presence here in the region and also working together, finding ways to cooperate with all of the members of Asia, including China.
Is there a realistic expectation that anything will be done completely to the needs and wants of the United States?
It's highly unlikely that we'll see some huge outcomes. Really, this is an effort of management. The president wants to have a good trip, but he's going to raise the issues that he feels are important, as will Xi Jinping. But both are in a management stage at this point. There's the elections coming up in the United States soon, and we'll have a new president. And so China's not going to necessarily jump into anything too drastic. And the same way, China is going through a leadership reshuffle next year. And so on both sides, there's a lot ahead that is uncertain, so you wouldn't expect that they would have too big of a breakthrough in any area. But as I mentioned earlier, the climate change thing may be one of the big highlights.
You mentioned trade agreements, and that brings the TPP to mind, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And we know that both major candidates to succeed Obama, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, have come out against the TPP. So why even bother talking about it?
Well, this is his legacy of sorts. This is something that President Obama wants to happen, and I don't think he would, you know, not talk about it. And, you know, whether or not the next president could reverse that and how they would reverse that is something that we'll just have to wait and see.
How tight is security in Hangzhou and for the entire proceeding?
It is massively tight. It's very tight. And what we're seeing is actually a culmination of months of efforts here. Just to give you an example, I came down here by high-speed rail. There were two checks in the train station in Beijing, and another getting out of after you get off the train and getting into the train station in Hangzhou. There's reminders, helpful reminders at the hotel desk about not flying UAVs or unmanned aerial vehicles and helicopters. And then when you go to the elevator, there's a passport check again after you've gone, of course, to the front desk and checked in. So there are layers of security everywhere. On the streets, the local government and authorities have deployed, some say, around 70,000 young students and old grandparents who are on the streets kind of keeping an eye on things at bus stops. And there's police everywhere. There are roadblocks. China has taken extensive efforts to make sure that this meeting goes off without a hitch. And rightfully so, you have more than 20 world leaders who are attending, as well as heads of international organizations, including the United Nations, who will be here as well. So it's a very important event. It's a very tough security challenge for China. But at the same time, it has basically gotten rid of a large portion of the population here. Hangzhou has a population of about 9 million, and it's basically a shell of what it usually is.
Good luck, Bill, in covering this. Bill Ide with us, Beijing correspondent for VOA. Time now to check social media, and who better to do that than our guru of such things, Andrew Palczewski. All right, tell me, what's trending?
Well, trending today is the name Brock Turner. Now, Brock Turner was convicted of sexually assaulting a woman at Stanford University where he was a swimmer. And the outrage that this generated because he was sentenced to only 6 months in jail has really carried across social media, and it's spiking today because he's been released after only 3 months. Now, this is kind of a story that's started on social media and has grown after his victim released her impact statement to the court, and that was picked up on social media. A lot of people, including Vice President Joe Biden, saying that she was very brave to do so. And now this outrage continues as he's released early, people saying that it's a slap in the face to victims of sexual assault, that someone who is an attacker can be released early. So a lot of debate and conversation about that on social media today.
And very quickly, anything else, Trenny?
Very quickly, hashtag taco trucks on every corner. The co-founder of Latinos for Trump said that if you don't enact his immigration plan, there'll be taco trucks on every corner. And social media says that wouldn't be such a bad thing. We love tacos. So it kind of backfired on him.
He'll find a way to turn it around. Andrew Palczewski, keep in touch with Andrew at APAL. That's on what, Twitter?
That's on Twitter, yep.
Yeah, what else?
And we can find you at VOA Melman on Twitter.
It's just amazing, isn't it? Andrew Palczewski.
The age we live in.
This is International Edition. Among the top stories we're covering for you, the UN World Food Program is warning that 40% of Afghanistan's population, or over 11.3 million people, are food insecure with chronic malnutrition effects. A suicide bombing at a court complex in northwest Pakistan has killed at least 12 people and wounded about 50 others. Samsung is recalling its Galaxy Note 7 smartphones after finding batteries of some of the flagship gadgets exploded or caught fire. And Malta reports say China suffered a failed space launch Thursday morning, resulting in the destruction of one of the country's most advanced Earth observation satellites. Expanded coverage of these and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Final results of the great elephant census have been released, and I'm afraid it's not looking good for the elephants in Africa. The survey report shows over the past decade, there has been a considerable drop in the number of elephants within the world's second largest continent. The number of elephants in Africa dropped by 30% between 2007 and 2014, and the current rate of decline is about 8% each year. In 93% of 18 countries measured so far, the current savanna elephant elephant population is 352,271. Poaching has been singled out as the primary cause in the decline in the elephant population. The Great Elephant Census, said to be the first ever Pan-Africa survey of savannah elephants, is funded by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen's Vulcan Corporation and is managed by the organization Elephants Without Borders. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Russia's president is denying that Moscow was behind an email hack that embarrassed White House hopeful Hillary Clinton, but said it was important that the information got into the public domain. Vladimir Putin told Bloomberg News, "I don't know anything about it." And on a state level, Russia has never done this, he said. Hacked emails leaked by WikiLeaks in July revealed that party leaders had sought to undermine the primary campaign of Clinton's rival Bernie Sanders, and U.S. officials said Russia was behind the release. Now the FBI has raised another alarm about the security of the U.S. election system. This week's alert focused on voter registration systems in the states of Illinois and Arizona. Again, Russia is a suspect. More from VOA's Steve Barragona.
In the latest cyber attacks, hackers got some personal information on about 200,000 Illinois voters, but officials say no voter records were changed or deleted, and Arizona officials said their system was not breached. If Russia was behind the hacks, it may have been a trial run for November's election or simply aimed at undermining trust, says the Center for Strategic and International Studies' James Andrew Lewis, reached by Skype.
One of the Russian goals is to just create uncertainty and doubt and concern about the electoral process. This contributes to it, even if they're caught. So their immediate goal is make Americans uncertain about the safety of their electoral process. They're doing pretty good.
Local, not federal, officials run elections, and there are more than 7,000 localities nationwide, each with different equipment and procedures in most cases. So experts say widespread interference is hard to do. But some tight races could be tainted, says the University of Notre Dame's Timothy Carone, reached by Skype.
My sense is that there's going to be certain races across the country where the issue of cyber attacks or compromise of those voting results by cyber attacks will be such that there will be extensive legal processes to resolve the issue, which could take quite a bit of time.
There you go.
Experts say security is improving, along with awareness of the vulnerabilities. This year, about three-quarters of American voters' ballots will have a paper copy available for checking if questions about fraud arise. The federal government is considering declaring that voting systems are infrastructure critical for national security, says White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
And that would give the federal government, an expert to the federal government, more of a role in assisting the administrators of those networks as they deter intrusions.
But with the election just weeks away, experts note there is not much time to significantly tighten security. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Well, let's check the business world. International Edition business reporter Jill Malandrino is standing, well, most likely sitting by in our New York bureau. Jobs reports out today. Jill, what's been the effect?
Well, you know what? It seems as if bad news is good news for the markets, as all three major averages were about 0.5% higher when the news came out and the markets opened in the U.S. We've sold off a bit since then, and it's kind of counterintuitive how bad news could be good for the markets, but essentially, since the data has been mixed, we saw a bad motor vehicle sales report yesterday, same thing with ISM manufacturing, and that's kind of balancing out some of the more hawkish reports that we had earlier in August. So this bad news allows traders to think that we might not get that interest rate hike in September, which ironically is bullish for the markets. And that's why we're seeing that upside today. And I think that, you know, most likely if you look at Fed fund rates, that we will not get that rate hike in September. So we'll look forward to the next meeting in November for that.
So again, bad news is good news. Have yourself a good weekend. We'll talk with you next week.
Okay? All right. Thank you.
Jill Malandrino live with us from our New York City Bureau. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
This is International Edition. American auto manufacturers are trying to figure out how to adapt to the accelerating pace of change as the U.S. population ages, technology improves, and societal expectations evolve. This uncertain future potentially puts billions of dollars and thousands of jobs at risk as auto executives ponder what products to create and how to build and manage them. As VOA's Jim Randall reports from Dearborn, Michigan, the Ford Motor Company employs a futurist to draw a clearer picture of what's coming up.
So this is going to be a battle between nature versus nurture.
Drawing pictures helps Ford's futurist Cheryl Connolly sort through blizzards of information that may shape the future transportation marketplace.
It helps me get to synthesizing the information and distilling it and trying to see if I can come up with an insight. So those images I do for myself.
She makes illustrations and takes notes as she looks beyond the auto industry and wonders about the ever more connected world, the growing middle class in emerging economies, expectations that technology will make life better, and environmental worries. Researchers say some new ideas include making plastic car parts out of wheat straw, tomato stems, trees, soybeans, captured carbon dioxide, and all kinds of other things instead of traditional petroleum. Sometimes they develop a lighter auto part and a more fuel-efficient car.
We are trying to use different renewable-based materials to make it foam materials, to get more green content or sustainable content in our applications.
Connolly says fuel efficiency and sustainability are a growing challenge for auto manufacturers.
As we add more and more people to the planet, I mean, they say 8 billion within the next 10 years. And so consumption will have to be redefined. Prosperity will be rethought. And I think this is why we're moving to this service-oriented, access-oriented marketplace, so that those people that can't afford a car still need mobility.
Environmentally friendly shared ride services are under development by Ford and others. This shuttle service is controlled by a smartphone app. Sharing a vehicle accommodates the growing number of customers who see transportation as a service they can rent to get them from place to place, rather than as a vehicle they must buy, repair, fuel, and park. Shared vehicles could be a cheap alternative for emerging markets and an efficient one for crowded wealthy countries. Some experts predict that shared vehicles, self-driving cars, and other changes could make more efficient use of vehicles and drastically cut demand for cars. Connolly says such concerns make some in the auto industry and elsewhere fear the future because it is easier to imagine all the ways things can go wrong than to imagine how they could all go right. Jim Randall, VOA News, Dearborn, Michigan.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. Death is final, as most of us know, leaving those of us who survive mostly with memories, photos, and the belongings of those whose lives have ended. But now technology and the Internet may be changing some of death's finality. Your digital imprint can live on even after you die. An artist in Los Angeles exploring what can be done with the data you leave behind has created a make-believe company called the Hereafter Institute. It's to show how we can remember the dead in the future, perhaps. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles, where the Hereafter Institute shows what can be done with someone's digital data after death.
Now, I'm just going to tighten this around your head.
The Hereafter Institute is part technology company, part funeral home. The guests who come here learn about how they can plan their digital afterlife.
I have friends that have passed away, and somehow their Facebook accounts remain alive. And so once a year when it's their birthday, you know, it's like Facebook says, you know, wish so-and-so a happy birthday. And it's this kind of awkward, sad.
What happens to the large amounts of digital data when a person dies is a question examined by creator Gabriel Barcia Colombo in this immersive artistic program here at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. Participants experience a series of interactive performances that deal with death and technology in the age of social media.
This technology sort of has a life of its own, and the question is, how do you want to be remembered? What are you going to do with your technology? And do you want to take control over that, or do you want to sort of leave it up to these other corporations or other people to deal with your own memories?
At the Hereafter Institute, video images can be placed in jewelry. Data can be placed on a record to play on the Hereafter Monument. Virtual reality allows people to revisit a loved one who had died. In this case, Barcia Colombo's grandfather.
I called him Abu for short.
But now with all this data and all these video memories, you know, we can really start to think about how people moved or reacted to jokes or how they laughed or, you know. And so to be able to see him walking again in this recreation of his garden was very moving to me.
It would be really a little bit difficult and disheartening to see a loved one.
You know, it's not a perfect reproduction of the person. It's still very digitized. And so I think as a memorial, it functions, but I don't think it would ever be in danger of becoming something that you could almost grow attached to because it's a replacement of the person.
A 360-degree body scan turns into an avatar at the very end of the performance, where the participant attends her own funeral. The Hereafter Institute may be an artist's creation, but participants say the ideas aren't so far-fetched because digital memorials are already happening when someone dies.
You want to, like, go back and look at all their pictures, and you want to write, you know, a message to their family.
These kind of impromptu digital memorials exist, and I think what this is implying is that what's impromptu might one day be officialized, and that would not be surprising to me.
The aim of the program is to make people think about the possibilities and what they want to do with their digital footprint after death. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Ponder that for a while, huh? Well, you've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for being with us. Our director, Steve Karish, engineer, Pete Hundley. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Enjoy your day and your weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is gravely concerned about specific accusations of abuse and torture that were made during the trial of 23 persons arrested following June 29th riots in Nouakchott, the capital of Mauritania. The arrests followed a protest against eviction by residents of a squatter camp in the capital, many of whom are former slaves. The protest turned violent when demonstrators threw stones and burned a police bus. 9 police and other Mauritanian citizens were injured. The United States condemns the serious injuries and associated property damage. The United States is concerned with reports of coerced confessions or statements obtained through torture, raising serious concerns as to whether each accused individual received a fair trial. The U.S. will closely follow an anticipated appeal process. Among those sentenced are 13 members of the Resurgence of Abolitionist Movement, an organization championing the anti-slavery movement in Mauritania. Mauritania was the last country in the world to officially abolish slavery in 1981. Nevertheless, slavery continues in the West African nation, where an estimated 4 to 20% of Mauritania's 3.5 million people are enslaved. The United States urges an immediate and comprehensive investigation into all credible allegations of torture, public release of findings of this investigation, and appropriate prosecution of any individuals whom the investigation finds were responsible for such acts. Mauritania enshrined its commitment against torture by characterizing it as a crime against humanity in the 2012 revision of the Mauritanian Constitution, and in April of this year established in law the National Mechanism for the Prevention of Torture, which has been partially staffed but not fully funded. The United States strongly encourages Mauritania to respect human rights and fundamental freedoms, including freedoms of expression and association for all Mauritanians. The U.S. supports fair trial guarantees, transparent and credible judicial processes, and respect for the human rights of all individuals.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.